disconnected.
Good morning, everyone. It's just 10 a.m. We like to start on time. I'd like to welcome everyone who's on our webinar today, all the vendors, HR vendors, school student management system vendors, BOCES, school districts, and any others that have joined us. I'm here in Albany, and this is Peter Rooney. I'm here in Albany with my colleagues from the State Education Department, Charlene Swanson and Joy Goods. I've been joined here in Albany by Marlene Dominio and Katie Duhl from the MORIC Regional Information Center. We also have on the line from Winnyrick, Tom Kamiga, who runs our repository the state repository located in Erie County. Today's agenda is to do kind of two things, a high-level overview of all of the changes to the data model that will be operative in 2011-12. For those of you that have joined us in the last three conferences of this sort, not much of this will be new. There are two new things here. They're relatively minor and I believe fairly simple. Most of the rest of this you should already be familiar with. I'd ask you to do two things. Email to cswanson@mail.nysed.gov to indicate your attendance at this conference. We use that attendance list to do follow-ups and to return information to you that we may not be able to answer here today. So if you do that, I would appreciate it. We have muted your lines to reduce interference with noise, but it doesn't mean we're not interested in your comments and questions. So when we finish our presentation today, we will open it to questions. For those of you who may be new to this process, we take the questions by the webinar screen where you're able to raise your hand in the column where you've indicated you're attending, and we take those questions then in the order in which the hands are raised. Finally, for those of you who would like a one-on-one follow-up to today's webinar, we will make those available. All you need to do following today's webinar is email Charlene Swanson, again, that's cswanson@mail.nysed.gov, and Charlene will set up a one-on-one follow-up with you if you have questions that either you don't want to ask here today in front of everybody else or questions that we can't resolve here for you today. So those are kind of the ground rules, and with that, I think we will get going. Christina, can you put this on full screen? I don't know if it is. At our end, it's kind of small. Thanks, Christina. I appreciate it. Now, again, this is the fourth webinar we've done on these templates for next year. For the most part, what I'm going to do overview here should be familiar to all of you. If there's some HR vendors that are new to this, there is only one HR template that affects you, and that will come at the very, very end. The rest of the main kind of mainstream data collection, we've explained now this will be the fourth time, and there isn't very much new in that. So what's new for 2011-12? In the student light template, the district of residence field is now required. We've discussed that before. We will discuss it again today when we go through the templates in detail. We have refined the templates again for those of you who have joined us before so that marking period and term can now be done by location. In previous years, marking period and term were district-wide variables and were causing problems for many of you. So we have made that modification. Marking period and term can now be defined by location. We have replaced the old stud grades template with student class grade detail. And you'll see there are some minor changes there. We've cleaned up the way we indicate a pass-fail to make it a little simpler to do. We've cleaned up the way we allow you to denote whether regents was used in the computation, so it's a little simpler to do. And we've added fields to collect credits and attempted and credits earned, which were not in the previous template. So there's a new template that plays the same role as the old stud grades template, but it's been designed to be, I think, a little more elegant, a little easier to use. The new staff student course template is the template that we use to collect the underlying data for teacher evaluation and for roster reporting. And in this case, there is a change from what we have shown you in the last three webinars of this type. So we will slow down for that one and take it in great detail and make sure that we answer any questions you may have. We also have included here, and this is for the first time, the new staff evaluation rating template. As you probably know, 2011-12 is the first year in which teachers are subject to evaluation using assessments as a part of their evaluation. The state is actually going to collect the result of those evaluations, and this staff evaluation rating template is the data model for that data collection. And then one final high-level thing, in case you missed it, the regents did vote to delay BOCES reporting by a year. As you may recall, we've had several webinars for BOCES only, and as it turns out, while I think it was those webinars were useful and helped us build the data model and helped us communicate well with the BOCES, the fact is subsequent to those webinars, the regents voted to make BOCES reporting optional. Now, I emphasize the word optional, because BOCES can choose to report. And if you do choose to report, we'll address that issue a bit later also. So that's a high-level view of what's new. Let's go through those bullets one at a time in some greater detail. District of Residence is on a student light template. You're all familiar with that. We've been using that for as long as we've been doing this project, I guess 7 years now, going on our eighth year. Field 41, which is the district of residence for a student, up until now has not been required. It's always been there. It's always been on the template. It is now required. The business rules that I have here regarding that template are on a template that's posted on a state website. So this is just repeating the business rules that you go out and read for yourself. You collect the district of residence for a student as a beds day. The student changes after beds day. You don't change that data element. The student resides out of state. We have a special code for that that's noted here. If a student was enrolled after beds day, you use the district of residence that you collect at the moment of that enrollment. So it's a fairly simple field. In terms of edits against the field, you have to have, of course, a legal district code, a valid district code, I should say. And if you don't have valid district code there, level zero, we'll kick that record back out to you. So that's a fairly simple change. I know we've discussed it many times. And as I said, if you'll hold your questions to the end, we'll take them later. Next slide. Marking period and term. We'll look at this template quickly later. The only change here is that we can now do this by location. So essentially, it includes a location code as well as a district code, whereas before there was only district code. The marking period and term values are table driven. Those tables will be on our website shortly, probably by the end of August, if not before. And so it's a fairly simple change, but very powerful. Next slide. The student grade detail template replaces stud grades, as I pointed out, replaces student grade template. We're going to use this to collect student grades and credits awarded. For 11-12, it's a very limited data collection. We've discussed this with you before, but let me be clear. At the state level, we are only interested in numeric grades associated with Regents exams. Those are required. All other grades are optional. If you optionally include other grades, the L1s in the RICS may use those to provide local services to you. We at the state will not collect those local grades. So to be clear, we will be collecting grades only for students who have completed the course, have a final grade in that course. And those are the grades that we will collect, and those grades must be numeric. So if there is anyone out there that happens to be doing secondary Regents level courses without numeric grades, you will have to convert your grade to numeric grade in order for us to be able to collect it. So that's 2011-12. In 2012-13, and we're not going to discuss that a lot, but we'll answer some questions on it. We will be collecting all courses and all grades, and then we'll have additional guidance on numeric grades and pass-fail grades and alpha grades and all the other things that would come into effect, as well as students that didn't complete courses. Right now, we're interested only in a student who completed a course and got a grade, and a grade must be numeric. As I said, and you're familiar with this because we use this in 10-11 to some extent, we have an indicator that distinguishes whether that final grade itself was computed. Oh, this is backwards. I'm sorry. Let me read this. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, no, that's correct. Apologize. We have an indicator that tells us whether the final grade for the course was computed using the region score as one of its components. And we need to distinguish those from grades that did not use the region score as one of the components. And that's a requirement we have from the federal government for analyzing final grades versus class grades. And the regions being a part of that computation is somewhat of a confounding variable. So we did that last year, as you know, but we've kind of cleaned up the indicator. It's a little easier to use now. We also have an indicator that's a pass-fail flag, but please make sure that you understand that that simply indicates whether the numeric grade that I mentioned, the numeric grade that you've already reported, is a passing grade or a failing grade. Since school districts get to determine what's passing and what's failing in a course, we have no way of knowing whether a numeric grade reported to us is a passing grade or a failing grade. So this is not a pass-fail flag in that you assign a kid a pass or a fail for the course. This is a pass-fail flag that tells us that the numeric grade the student received in that course is a passing grade or a failing grade. And I think you're familiar with that. We had it in the template last year, but I think now it's more straightforward and simpler to do. And finally, the student grade detail template has two new fields. Fields for reporting credits attempted and credits earned. We believe in most cases those two values will be equal, but we're told that in some cases that's not so, and so we provided both fields to accommodate that situation. Next template, please. Now, this is the one template we're going to slow down a little bit later and take some time discussing. This is brand new. We admit to you that it is, I wouldn't say complex. I think we have a very elegant solution to a complex situation. The staff student course template is intended to actually do two things simultaneously. One, it will be used to collect the underlying data needed for teacher evaluation. At the same time, we're going to use it to collect information that can be used to generate class rosters for those courses that are being reported. So that twofold purpose utilizes the fields in a template differently depending on which of those purposes you're complying with. And we'll try to make that as clear as we can as we go forward. Next slide. When you look at the template, and we'll get a comprehensive view of it in a moment, but when you look at the template, those of you who have seen this template before, you will see that there is a new field, a field called reporting date. We are going to use that field to distinguish between data that's being reported for roster purposes versus data that's being reported for teacher evaluation purposes. The reason we had to make this change is that the Task Force on Teacher Evaluation recently gave us a new requirement. And the new requirement is that when we count the number of hours that a teacher and student are engaged in instruction together, which this template does, as you well know, we may not count hours after the assessment in that course has been given. Prior to this, you may recall, we had defined this template as a school year or course length template. In the case of the fourth and eighth grade ELA and mathematics assessments, that means we would have been counting days and hours after the assessment was given. Since that instruction has no impact on a student's performance on those assessments, we are now cutting off the count of hours that a teacher and student are together as of the first date of the assessment period, the state assessment period. So that brings us to that reporting date and the final two bullets. If the data that you are reporting are for roster purposes, then the reporting date is defined as June 30th, of that school year. Now that June 30th is the date for RASTA, regardless of how long the course actually meets. The course is a one-quarter course. If the course ends in January, if the course is a three-quarter course and ends sometime in March, it makes no difference. If reporting for RASTA purposes, the date for the reporting date is June 30th. If the data are being reported for teacher evaluation purposes, then the reporting date is set as the first date of the assessment period for the assessments associated with that course. Those dates we will publish as soon as we know them. The dates for the fourth and eighth grade ELA next year have not been given to us by OSA yet. But the minute we have them, we will publish them on our website, and those will be the only valid dates in that field. So repeating, the only valid dates in the reporting date field on the staff student course template will be either June 30th of the school year in question, which in this case is June 30th, 2012, or the first date of the assessment period for the assessments associated with that course, and those dates we will publish. And we will edit against those dates, and any dates that are not from that table, that are not valid dates, will be rejected by Level Zero. We'll get into this again, and you'll have lots of time to answer questions. We're going to go through the template in detail. And like all good teachers, when we get to that, I'll probably be repeating this all over again. But that's the one real change from the last time you folks saw these templates. Next slide, thank you. The remaining fields in the template really are the same, but we need to modify the definition of one of them, which we'll get to in a moment. The remaining fields collect the metrics for how long a teacher and student spent together in instruction. As was before, we do account for student attendance, but we do not account for teacher attendance. We only account for teacher enrollment. And as I said, we will discuss this in great detail. Next slide, please. You've seen this template before, but we always posted it with a little note that said we don't know enough about it to give you any guidance on it, and we kind of let it sit there for a while. Now that the task force has worked on this, we do have the guidance for you. The template is now annotated. It's a very simple and straightforward template. It basically collects data related to a teacher's evaluation. For those of you who have been following this, teachers will be evaluated in three parts. 20% of their evaluation will be based on state assessments, so they'll get a score there that ranges from 0 to 20. Secondly, 20% of their evaluation will be based on local assessments, so a second score of 0 to 20. Thirdly, they'll be based on a locally negotiated observation evaluation rubrics. And by the way, the state released just yesterday, if you haven't seen them, check your emails, the rubrics that districts are permitted to adopt to comply with that 60%. They were published by the State Education Department just yesterday. If you don't have them, email Charlene and she'll forward it to you. So those three scores will result in compositely in an overall evaluation on a scale of 1 to 4, as you know. Failing, improving, teacher needs improvement, and I forget the exact categories, but it's a scale of 1 to 4. So the template is really designed to collect those four data elements, and that's all. So you'll see it's fairly simple. They'll collect the first 0 to 20 score, the second 0 to 20 score, the third 0 to 60 score, and the value 1, 2, 3, or 4 for the overall composite score. And we'll take a look at that template in a moment also. So that's kind of our high-level overview with one final caveat, a reminder that BOCES, your reporting, if there are any BOCES on there today listening to us, the BOCES reporting is now optional. We would encourage BOCES on the phone on this webinar today, if you intend to report for 11-12, please contact your Level 1 provider immediately. Prepping for BOCES data collection will be distinctly different in some regard than prepping for all the others. And so the sooner we get started, the sooner we look at your student management system, the sooner you understand and get Level Zero installed and so on, the easier this will be for you and, frankly, for us. So we hope there are some BOCES that are willing to be the pioneers and stumble through this year in a year where it's not required. But if you do intend to do it, please contact your level one provider immediately. That's a high-level overview. Again, if you have questions, please write them down and hold them because we're going to go through the templates one at a time. So can we have the templates? Let's start. For those templates that are the same as last year or even slightly modified from last year but have been included in our previous discussions, frankly, I'm not going to take a tremendous amount of time. If you have questions on them, then we will answer your questions at the end. But as I go through them, I'm going to focus on the new templates and the ones that have changes. So we'll start with Student Light, and we'll go through all the templates that are used. The Student Light template has that one change that I mentioned earlier on the slides, Field 41, District of Residence. If you go and get this template off our website, you will see in the instructional rules column the business rules that I had included on the slide. So it's just a reminder that that is now a required field. The School Entry Exit template has no change in its design, but it does have change in valid values. We have added two new values to the School Entry Exit table. And they are for BOCES only. So for those of you who have SMSs that are serving school districts, there are no changes for you. Oops, I'm being corrected. Thank you. I apologize. We did extend the use. My apologies. We have added two new values, 0055, 0066, and those are defined as?
To be used for instructional reporting only. If you're only reporting the student for instructional purposes.
If you're reporting the student only for instructional purposes, then 55 and 66. Can you give an example of 55 and 66 other than entry into a BOCES program so we're clear on that?
If you're teaching a course for students who are not enrolled in your school district, just for one course doesn't fit in their schedule or it does not offer it in their school district, and so they're taking it from your school, you would report them only for the purpose of evaluating the teacher.
Okay. That's 55 and 66. Originally, you put that in as enrollment in BOCES and still remains enrollment in BOCES because it's subject to the same rules Charlene was just pointing out. But then we discovered there were other situations where students are enrolled in courses that are not being conducted in the district in which the student is legally enrolled. And so 55 and 66 gets them into that program and out of the program. There are no changes in the next few templates, Programs Fact, Assessment Response, special ed, snapshots are all the same as they were in 2010-11. Course template is important, so please pay attention to it. It doesn't have any major changes, but it is the template where we associate your local course code with the state course code. Remember that the only courses we're collecting that are required to be collected in this year are those courses that map to one of the state course codes that are on our website and that you've seen many, many times. The only way we can associate your local course code, which is the only thing we really collect on a regular basis, to the state course code is this table. So this table, for the most part, has the usual fields. You can go down and look through them, the district code, location code, school year date, and all those kinds of things. But it's important that you populate the course code, both local and state, in the appropriate fields on this template. Staff snapshot, really same way, same concept. Staff snapshot allows us to collect information about your staff member, but predominantly allows us to associate your local staff ID with the state assigned staff ID. I'm assuming by now that you've all been involved in state IDs for a while now, and that there aren't any issues related to that, but we'll take any questions you may have a little bit later. The location marking period table, this is the one I mentioned earlier. The change for this year is you'll see that field 2 now includes a location code and field 8 includes a term code. Those are both new. In previous years, we had only marking period codes, and the marking period codes applied to the entire school district. Now you can distinguish marking periods in term by location. The marking period values themselves and location and term code values themselves are table driven, and the combination valid combinations of marking periods and terms will be published along with our other table values somewhere by the end of August. The next one, student class grade detail, is new, brand new, so we'll take time and go through this in some detail. This replaces the old studs grades, and so let's go through this a field at a time, make sure that we're all clear on this. Field one is the district code in the usual manner. Field two is the location code in the usual manner. Field three is the course code. And this is a good example of what I was referring to before. When we collect course code on all of these templates, we collect local course code. And the only way we can associate that with the required state course code is for you to have filled out the course template correctly. So here's an example of why that's so important. School year date is the usual default, June 30th that year. A supplementary course differentiator is a field that East Scholar uses for some of their clients, but we do not use it. However, it is a key field, so it must be populated. So we populate it with NA. And that's not N/A, it's NA, I believe. We'll check on that in a minute. Section code is the local section code. Student ID is the local student ID. Grade detail code is the for our purposes for this year is what I mentioned earlier. We are only collecting final grades. The grade detail code for final grades is FG. If you choose to collect other kinds of grades, quarter grades, semester grades, end grades, whatever they may be, there are table values for those other kinds of grades. But the only grades that will be moved to the state repository are the FG grades, the final grades. Reporting date defaults to is June 30th of that particular school year. Marking period code is from the marking period table that we defined earlier. Field 13 is that numeric grade that I referred to before for the 2011-12 school year, where we will only be collecting numeric grades, and all numeric grades that are final grades. And that implies, of course, that the student completed the course. So for the class detail outcome code in field 14, the only values we'll be collecting there in this year will be P, if the numeric grade reported above is a passing grade, and F, if the numeric grade is a failing grade. In 12-13, we'll be using that field with additional values to explain students who did not finish the course and get a grade. Those values not yet be determined, but over the course of this year, we'll generate them and share them with you. So that's the class detail outcome code in field 14. The next few fields we do not use until we get the term code. And again, those values come from the marking period term code table that we've already looked at. Field 21 is that yes-no field that I referred to when we were doing the PowerPoint. This is where you tell us whether the final grade that was reported back up in field, I think 7, I can't see the full template anymore, used the Regents grade, the score on the Regents exam, as a component of the computation for that final grade. Why? If the Regents was used, and N, if the Regents was not used. And I believe, and then credits attempted and credits earned. Thanks. The two new fields, fields 22 and 23, credits attempted, credits earned, those are new fields. Those were not in the old studs grade template that we used in 10-11. All of the other fields here were either there or named differently or looked differently, but conceptually they were all there. These two fields, credit attempted and credit earned, are new. The marking period code table is just a dimension table that defines those values. I'm not going to go through that. Let's get to staff student course. This is the big change for this year, and let's take our time and go through this. Staff student course is the template that we use to do two related but different things. One is we collect the amount of time that a teacher and student spent together in a particular course and section. That time is measured in minutes. And as we go through this template, you'll see the mechanics by which we do that. Simultaneously, we have a need to create rosters for entire courses. And so we've used this template for that purpose as well. With that, we'll try to go through this a field at a time, and we're not that far away from you being able to ask questions, so I appreciate your patience. Going down through the template now. I just want to make sure I have the right template here. Oh, I do. Okay. Thank you. Field 1, staff district code. Field 3, student district code. Field 6, course district code. In New York State, those three values must all be the same. We understand that eScholar created this template to provide flexibility where those things could vary. But in our first year of implementation, our business rule is very simple, and it's defined in Field 1. You should use the district code of the LEA that employs the teacher, and that district code should be the same for the other fields that I mentioned, Field 3 and Field 7. Field 2 is the local staff ID. Field 4 is the local student ID. Field 5 is our usual school year date format, June 30th. Field 7 is the course location code, and that's the usual location code, the building in which the course is being offered in that district under the district code. Field 8 is the course code, and it's always local course code. Field 9, you see that supplementary course differentiator again, same rule as the last time you saw it, use NA. Field 10 is the section code. Now we get to the new field. This was not in the previous publication of these templates. The reporting date. I went over this when we did the PowerPoint, but let me do it again. This template will be used for two purposes, collecting rosters of students that were in courses over the course of a school year. For roster purposes, this date will be June 30th of the school year in question. I repeat what I said before to anticipate your questions. What happens if a course ends at the end of the first quarter in November? You still use June 30th. And you'll see why when we go through the start and end relation dates for a student. If the data you're submitting is to be used for teacher evaluation purposes, then the date that goes in the reporting field is the first date of the assessment period, the state assessment period, for the assessments associated with that course. We will publish those dates. So those published dates for assessment periods and June 30th of the school year will be the only valid values in that reporting date field. We'll answer questions on that later. This, of course, means students will have multiple records, as you would well recognize. An eighth grader who takes the eighth grade assessment, takes the ninth grade algebra regions, and, of course, is on for roster purposes, would have multiple records with multiple reporting dates. Relationship start date is the first day that that teacher and student come together in that course and section. So for most teachers and students, that's going to be the first day of the school year. But if a student adds into a course halfway past November, then their start date is on that date in November for that teacher and that student. Same is true of teachers. If the teacher changes and half past November there's a new teacher in that course, then all the students in that course have a new start date with that teacher as the date the teacher entered. Relationship end date, same concept. It's a date on which the teacher or student leaves that course and ends the relationship. Naturally, you get multiple start and end dates across the school year as students enter and leave and enter again and leave again. The potential student instructional time is the total amount of minutes that the teacher and student could have been together between the start date and the end date noted above if the student were there 100% of the time. So it's basically the total number of minutes that that course meets between the relationship start date and relationship end date. The actual student instructional minutes is exactly what it says. It's the actual number of minutes that the student was there. So the actual number of minutes is adjusted by the student's attendance. Now, we've been asked a lot the question concerning how much of time does a student have to be in the classroom before the student is present for the day. The student comes into a class and is there for 10 minutes and then goes down to the nurse and doesn't come back. Do I have to record that 10 minutes? Our answer is that as of now, attendance policy is local decision by school districts. We do not have a statewide attendance policy for those issues. We do intend to work on that during this year and hope to have attendance policy by next year. But for the time being, that is a local decision-making policy. So you decide whether the student is absent or present. You decide how many minutes the student was in attendance in that course, and you report the number of minutes of actual student instruction in field 15. Field 16, instructional responsibility weight. This allows us, when there are multiple teachers teaching the same group of students, to distribute the responsibility for that instruction across multiple teachers. So it's conceivable that a class has a teacher that comes in 4 days a week and a different teacher the fifth day, and in that situation there'd be a 0.8 responsibility for one and a 0.2 responsibility for the other. For the 2011-12 school year, at the state level, that value should be 1.0. We are only collecting data on a teacher who has primary responsibility for the instruction of students. The definition of primary responsibility was published several times. You can get it in the memo that Ken Wagner sent to the field. It's published on our website. And those are the only teachers that you are required to report. If you optionally report other teachers through your local L1s, then for this year at least, you're free to define instructional responsibility weight any way you want. By next year, we will have guidance on instructional responsibility weight to cover all the various scenarios that have been pointed out to us, some of which are very complex. So we will be working on that. We will have guidance for you. But let me be clear about this. In terms of state data collection, that field should be 1.0. Any value other than 1.0, we will not be collecting. The exclude from evaluation indicator, we'll have additional guidance on that over the course of the year. It is exactly what it says. It'll allow districts to review verification lists of students and teachers, and under rules and conditions that we publish, will provide a way to exclude a student from a teacher's evaluation. If it's determined that for some reasons, a long-term medical leave or some other reason that wasn't evident when the data was being collected, excuses a teacher from being responsible for an individual teacher, this flag will allow the district to exclude that that student. And finally, we get total two more fields, total planned class time. Now, this differs from I can find this.
Planned instructional time.
Yeah, thank you, Charlene. Field 14, in that the total planned class time is the complete total time that that class meets from the first day it meets to the last day it meets in minutes. Field 14 is bounded by the start and end relationship date of the teacher and student in question. This is not. This is the total amount of minutes that that class is scheduled to meet the entire school year. We've been asked a lot about, suppose there's a field trip one day, do we take that out? Suppose there's a snow day one day, do we take that out? Our answer is use the school calendar to compute this amount of time. If there's substantial time loss and there are extenuating circumstances, we would review those situations. But under the current rules, use the school calendar to plan and report the number of minutes in class time. And finally, the term code in question in 10 is the term code that we mentioned many, many times today, and is generated from the location marking period table we talked about earlier, and is the usual value that you will already have from the tables. Finally, our other new change, the staff evaluation rating template, you know, very, very straightforward. Keep in mind what I said in the templates. This is intended to simply collect four values for each teacher that's been evaluated. The 0 to 20 on the first part of the evaluation, 0 to 20 on the second part of the evaluation, 0 to 60 on the third part of the evaluation, and a 1, 2, 3, or 4 on the overall evaluation. And that's the intention here, and you'll see for that reason this template is reasonably simple and very straightforward. Field 1, the staff district code is the usual district code. Staff ID is the local staff ID, again, emphasizing the importance of doing the staff snapshot correctly so that we can make the proper association there. The evaluation criteria code will be table-driven to determine whether the value being reported is the 0 to 20 first score, 0 to 20 second score, 0 to 60 third score, or 1 through 4 composite score. School year date is the usual format, June 30th of that year. The reporting date, same thing, will match the school year date. Evaluation review date we do not use. It may be of use locally, especially when there are negotiated agreements as to when and by when an evaluation must take place. But state level, we do not use that. Evaluation criteria rating code is an NA. We do not use that either. Evaluation criteria rating points are the actual value that the teacher received in the criteria code that was delineated back up in field 3. We do not use the evaluation period start and end dates, but again, they may be of importance locally. Recently, the decision has been made to not collect information on the evaluators. When we originally designed this template, we thought we were going to have to collect not only the teacher being evaluated, but who did the evaluation. Subsequent to that, the task force decided that we would not do that. So we will not use fields 11, 12, or 13. That's the set of templates for 11, 12. I'll repeat myself one last time. For those of you who have been on our other three webinars, nothing has changed except the addition of the reporting date field and the staff student course template and the annotation of the evaluation template that I just went through. Other than that, every other template that we went through rather quickly, I must admit today, are identical to what we did in our previous three webinars. So with that, I think I'm going to open it to questions, and we'll use the usual format. If you raise your hand, we'll call on you. When we call on you to unmute yourself, you?
Pound six.
That will unmute you. We'll be able to, we and everyone else on the line can answer your question. We have a large group here in Albany. Jeff Baker just joined us, and there's a good chance one of us will know the answer to your question. So if you could raise your hand, Katie, I can't see them, so can you tell me who's
it looks like Nassau
Bosie. Nassau Bosie, unmute and ask your question. Nassau, you there? Pound six, Pat. Do you want to risk unmuting everyone? Something's wrong. Well, let's try one other. Suffolk, you have your hand up. Joe, try pound six, see if you can get on.
You know, with me.
Hey, see, Suffolk. Hi, Joe, what's up?
Okay, a couple of things. One, on the staff evaluation template, the last one?
Yes.
Is my understanding correct that this template would have to be loaded four times for each teacher that's being evaluated, one for each of the components, and once for the overall evaluation?
Four records.
Yes.
Okay. Can I ask a question? Why was it not designed to be one template? Because that's going to wind up with a lot of data to move, instead of just being one template for the teacher's entire evaluation.
We may change the number of components that we have in the future.
Speak up.
No.
We wanted to make it flexible, Joe, so that we could, over the years, perhaps change it. At the time it was developed, the task force didn't finish its work, so we had to maintain a real flexibility, and we think this is flexible. The total amount of data when it's merged really shouldn't be a lot different. But we hear your concern, but the flexibility required that we do it this way. Tom, can you jump in any time, okay? Tom, why don't you unmute yourself so you can be on all the time?
All right, can we go? Go ahead.
No, I just want to make sure you can hear me now.
Well, we can hear you.
Okay, but let me say. All right, can we go to the staff student course template for a minute? I don't know if you can put it up there again. On the on field 11, which is the reporting day, the description. This is just a housekeeping issue, I think, to start with. The description in that field is not what you said.
Oh, really? Didn't we change that yesterday, Molly?
Okay, so just FYI, you said that for roster day purposes, it has to be the last day of the school year.
June 30th, that's
not
correct, Joe.
That's not what that description
is. I'm sorry, Joe, we apologize. We accidentally popped up an earlier version.
That's
was correct. What's on the screen is wrong.
Okay,
thank
that's
you,
a housekeeping issue. I just want to point that out.
However, we'll modify it and publish it correctly. Thanks for pointing it out, Joe.
However, stay on reporting date, the real issue. help me understand why you couldn't just calculate today. You know when the beginning of each assessment period is. Why is this going to require multiple loads? And then also, then why not just put a separate date field in, one for roster purposes and one for the evaluation purposes?
I've got to ask Tom Kamiga to respond to that, but I'll say this to you, Joe. We did have a lot of options as a designist, there's no question. We tried to keep it simple and elegant and able to fit multiple purposes. With regard to the first question, we know the dates, yes, but the relationship start date, relationship end date, if they span before and after an assessment date, it makes it impossible for us to prorate how much of the time was before and how much of the time was after.
So in terms of
a field that delineated this is roster, this is not, we discussed it at length, and with the help of the eScholar people, the decision was made to design it the way it's designed. But with that, Tom, would you jump in and comment on that?
Can't be calculated at the state level because the only place that the school calendar is available that can determine the number of minutes that have to be included in those durations is in the student management systems. So that's why they have to be provided the way we're asking for that data to be provided.
All right, so this means now from a district's perspective, a district will have to load this template. Let's take a teacher who's teaching fourth grade, and that teacher is the teacher of record for ELA and math and science, if we're collecting it, whenever we collect that, okay? And so that for that teacher-student relationship, we have to load this template four times.
Correct.
Once for each assessment and once for roster purposes.
Correct.
Okay. Kind of work. I'm done.
Joe, you know us. We this is new for us. We think that we have a solution that's flexible and elegant, but you know us as well. And we'll review that with you over the course of the year. If this has to be onerous on districts, and next year we're extending this to all courses, remember.
I think the more times you make districts do this
we'll,
kind of
you know
stuff,
us, Joe. We'll take a look at it.
I understand.
This is what we're committed to. For the first year, as you well know, we're only collecting 4 through 8 ELA and math in terms of assessments. So the overall impact hopefully will be minimal, and we'll assess how it works.
I'm sure
we'll hear from you about it, Joseph.
The more times we have to do that kind of thing, the more likely there are going to be errors. That's just my comment.
Yes, for an answer. We hear you.
Okay. One other thing.
Oh, you got something else?
I got one more. On the district of record, as being reported, I forgot which template it was on, where
in
the district
Whitefield
is.
41.
As of beds day, if a kid moves into a district after beds day, is the expectation that the district that the kid moves into will record in their upload the beds code of the district from which the kid came?
No.
It's the definition that Peter had in the PowerPoint that if the kid comes after Beds Day, the district of residence would be the last district that they were in that was captured when the student enrolled in the district.
But the district in which the kid goes to, they can leave that field blank, but I thought it was a required field.
No, it's a required field. You cannot leave it blank.
So if they have to put the Beds code in of the district from which the student came.
As the PowerPoint said, the district of residence would be the district that the student came from that's recorded when the student enrolls in the district that's reporting the student.
What if that wasn't the district they were in on Beds Day? What if we have a very mobile
student?
It doesn't
matter.
It's okay.
It's the business rule.
Okay.
And it may not be the district they're in on Beds Day.
We can tell that they were not in that district that's reporting the student by their enrollment record. We can tell that that district didn't have the student on Beds Day.
Okay.
So we wouldn't be using their district of residence for Beds purposes.
Thanks, guys. Helene?
Thank you.
Helene,
yeah,
you're next.
We have a question here. Okay.
Okay. On the student course grades template,
yeah.
What does the state expect to see if a student's in a course that offers a Regents and that student doesn't take the Regents?
If they have a final grade in the course, their final grade should be reported. If they completed the course and have a final grade, we expect to see the final grade. The fact that they haven't taken the Regents will determine when we compare the final grades to the state assessments. You notice there's no state assessment in this template. There's only the final grade in the course. That's what we're trying to collect. We're trying to collect final grade in the course.
But there's a column that says, is a Regents included in the calculation of the final grade?
Well, in that case, the answer would be no, since the student didn't take the Regents.
Okay, so for some students in the course, there would be a Y, and for the students that were the exceptions, there would be an N.
There would only be a Y if the algorithm that the district uses in computing final grade includes the Regents score grade as part of that component score.
It will include the Regents score grade for those students that have a Regents exam available.
That have a Regents score and is used for the computation. There are places that don't use it in the computation. So it's not just they have a Regents score. They have a Regents score and it was used to compute the final grade. So only the district would know the algorithm that they're using, and they're going to have to set a flag as to whether they're using an algorithm for that purpose or not.
Okay, because the way the question is worded now is it says, is the Regents used to compute the grade in the course? It doesn't say
yes.
For that student. And it could be that for 99% of the students in the course, the Regents is used. But for one student who either has a medical exemption or another waiver or maybe
that's true. What you're saying is true, yes.
It will not be used. So then
correct.
That student will have a different tag.
Correct.
Right.
That's why this is associated with a student and a grade, not universally across the district.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Peter, I also, the staff student course, I'm not sure what you mean for RAFTA purposes.
Tom, you want to answer that? You define that more precisely, I think, than I do.
The staff, for RAFTA purposes, if you're familiar with the existing report that we are producing in the level two reporting environment. We have a RAFTA report that associates this to students. Next year we will be using the staff student course template and the data collected through that template to generate RAFTA reports. You notice this, the new student course detailed template does not have, we're not collecting staff information through that report, so the RAFTA reports can only be collected or generated through the staff course student template.
So it's a student, it's a teacher and the students that are associated with it, that teacher, is that what you mean by that?
Teachers are associated with which students and which courses, that's what the RAFTA report, it's basically the teacher of record.
Okay. Also, I just found out that, you know, in that teacher course report in level two, the teacher name is coming from the teach system,
right.
Which I guess we weren't clear about, so that if people do not go back to the TEACH system and change a teacher whose name is changed, the teacher's name is going to come out the way it is in the TEACH system.
Correct.
Is that
update the TEACH system?
Right. So, but that's definitely where that teacher name is coming from.
Yes, you'll note on the template that the teacher first name and last name are for local use only. And so on the roster report, those are sourced from TEACH.
Okay. And then there was an evaluation criteria rating template.
Yes.
Are we not using that?
That's a dimension table that just defines the values that are used in field 3 and field 8 of the template we discussed. And so, yeah, we use it. We'll publish it. It'll be out there. It's just a dimension table that defines the values. And those values are predefined. It's 0 to 20, 0 to 20, 0 to 60, and 1 to 4. So, you're right. We didn't go through it today, Helene, but it just defines the dimension values.
And it'll be distributed with the other dimension tables that come from level 2.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Winnie Rick.
Hi. I had a couple questions. Somebody earlier was saying that for the staff evaluation, for the rosters, for a fourth grader, there'd be a roster for staff student course records, one for ELA, one for math, one for science, and then one for roster purposes. I guess I'm a little confused about how there's just one for the roster purposes. Is there some sort of course that's just fourth grade, or why would there not be three different rosters for that teacher for those students?
There should be one for each subject.
One for each subject is what I would think. And so
I think there should be, but that's not my field. Tom?
It's tied to a course.
Okay.
So if you have this would have to be collected at the course level, so you would have four different courses, one for ELA, one for math, one for science. And then the entry for the entire school year would be the enrollment piece of it that would cover the duration of the course for the entire school year. So that would have to be a separate reporting because the durations for those are calculated separately.
Okay, so you would have two records, one for each subject, one for ELA roster, one for ELA evaluation purposes, one for math roster, one for math evaluation purposes.
That's correct.
Et cetera.
That's right.
So for that fourth grade teacher, you'd actually have six records for each of those
kids.
Okay. I just want to be completely clear on this. With the staff student course, the potential student instructional time, for those records that are based on the reporting date of the assessment, the potential student instructional time would go from the beginning of the school year until the date of the assessment.
That's a good point. I think there's some guidance there that I probably didn't point out. The potential student instructional time, keep in mind, is bounded by the relationship start date and relationship end date, okay? It's the total number of minutes between relationship start date and relationship end date that class is meeting. The relationship end date, I think I forgot to point this out, but it is in the template. The relationship end date cannot be any later than, cannot be greater than the reporting date. And so that takes care of the situation that you're talking about. The reporting date, as we defined it before, is either June 30th or the first date of the assessment period. When you do the relationship end date, that end date cannot be any greater than the reporting date.
Okay.
That cuts off the count of the minutes as of the assessment period.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Peter, okay. One other thing I wanted to clarify, too, is that the planned class time.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Tom.
The total planned class time is also capped at using the reporting date.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Tom. I didn't point that out. Thank you. That is the maximum value for total planned class time is as of the reporting date. So for roster purposes, it goes through June 30th of the year. For evaluation purposes, it ends as of the assessment period. Thanks, Tom.
And one other thing, for co-teaching situations where you have two teachers in the classroom that are equally responsible, for the student's education, would that be a report, an instructional responsibility weight of 1 for both teachers or 0.5 for each teacher?
For 11-12, you as the local school district get to decide which of those teachers is the primary teacher and you report them as a 1.0. For 12-13, we'll provide guidance as to how to distribute instruction responsibility weight. But that is an issue. The district has to decide which of those teachers is going to be held primarily responsible for those students for that year for 11-12.
Even if the district considers both of those teachers primarily responsible?
Yes.
Does anybody else here have questions?
Yes. Peter, I have a question about, again, the collection for roster and also the collection for the, you know, for assessment for the evaluation. Have you given thought to at what point in time collecting for each, are you anticipating that we collect the roster in the beginning of the year or something and then the evaluation at the end?
I'll speak to that. I would expect that these potentially could be collected at different time periods during the school year. The pieces that are used for evaluation really only make sense after the test administration. The roster information is something that we would probably collect on an annual or on a regular weekly, you know, basis or monthly basis or whatever the schedule is that we collect other data on. Because that potentially is going to be used to drive, if we get into the data portal down the road, you know, the security of which teachers can see data for which students, that's going to drive all of that. We're anticipating that's going to drive all the access to the data portal. So that we probably want to refresh more frequently. The evaluation pieces, however, I think can be less frequent in the data.
Are there any vendors with the handle?
Anything else here, Winnie? Peter, I think that's it for Winnie Rick.
Okay, thanks, Winnie Rick. I'd like to give the vendors an opportunity to ask questions. We appreciate the questions of the Ricks, and I'm sure that the answers to those questions are clarifying things for the vendors. And we thank the Ricks for our participation. We're not going to cut you off, but I would like to give the vendors an opportunity. So could we do this just for a moment? Those of you from Ricks, could you temporarily put your hands down so that the hands that are left up should be from other parties, either vendors or BOCES or maybe even school districts for all I know. So let's take just a few seconds. I'm going to ask the Ricks, and we'll give you opportunity later. We're not cutting you off, to put your hands down. And if the vendors have any questions, I think it would be nice to hear from them.
Centris.
Mary?
You've been answering a lot of my questions as we go through, so thanks for
that. But I thought it would be nice to hear from you guys directly. What can I do to help you?
I do have a couple questions. I noticed that some of the other templates, in addition to the staff student course, also had this reporting date field that is new to the staff student course template. But in all other templates, that should still be the June 30th date?
I think so. Tom, I think all other templates for the time being, we use June 30th. Is that correct?
I believe so, Peter.
I think so. Without looking at each individual one, Mary, I'm not 100% certain, but I'm reasonably certain that reporting dates are required because of the way eScholar defined the data model, but we don't actually use them, but we have to populate them. And so we just use June 30th to kind of, frankly, get it out of the way. In the staff student course, we use the reporting date, as we've already described, as a matter of controlling the type of data.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that shouldn't be the same date on all templates.
No, not at all. And, in fact, I think they're annotated that way if you take a look at them. But we'll take a look also and email you if the answer is any different than what we just said, but I don't believe it is.
Okay, great. And then the other thing, and maybe I misunderstood previously, but you've said several times today that the final grade will only be collected on students who have actually completed the course.
Our assumption is that they have a final grade, they completed the course, so maybe I misspoke. Let me say it this way. We will collect any student that has a final grade. If district made a determination that a student is entitled to a final grade in a course, then we will collect that final grade.
Right, but if a student drops the course or doesn't complete it and therefore doesn't have a final grade, then we're not sending up that field blank or with any
that
other
is correct.
Value.
For this year, we're not collecting that student at all on a stud grades template. We're collecting only students that have a final grade.
Okay, but in the other templates, like the student life template, for example, the student, even if he drops out, will be reported.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Maybe that was where my disconnect was. Okay. I think those are the only questions you had not already answered. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
John
Lynch.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. John, we can. You want to tell us where you're from?
Yes. Hi, I'm from Rediker Software.
Hi, John. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. What can we do to help you?
Well, Ophelia Cruz, who works for me, usually attends these webinars, and so she's off today, and I'm covering for her. So excuse my naivety if it comes
to do we thoroughly confuse you? Because that generally is one of our primary goals.
No, this is a very well-run meeting, I have to say. I've attended a lot of these, and this is the first time I attended one of yours, and I give you props. So
thank you very much.
So one housekeeping question.
Yes.
I've been taking a lot of notes on things that I think Ophelia will need to know about, and I know some of the details, but not all. Are you having to be recording this webinar so that you can some of
yes,
the
we are. Yes, great. We're recording it, and a link will be placed on our website under the vendor support area, which I'm sure your staff knows how to find.
Terrific. So that gets that out of the way. So I have several questions that I wrote down about the staff evaluation part, some okay. of which have already been answered by some of the other questions. Shooting off one of those last questions regarding the different times you're collecting the evaluation records versus
mm-hmm.
roster records, I completely understand the concept that, you know, there's a different record for the roster versus the evaluation.
Right.
Regarding frequency,
mm-hmm.
Will it be a set frequency for all schools? And will it always contain all evaluation records that are known at that time? Or do you envision that it could possibly be more incremental, where smaller record sets of just completed evaluations could be sent a little at a time?
Tom?
It's really dependent on what the district wants to do. We don't require that people send all data all the time. If the district sends the data and updates the data, we'll process it. But some of it is dependent on how the district wants to process their data and extract it from their student management systems.
Great. One of the reasons I ask that is you're really not asking for a lot. Those four main items, and we can certainly capture that, you know, at a field level. At a table level and just do a blast whenever the reporting period comes around. But we also have another product that is sort of a new product that's regarding doing actual staff evaluations in a very content-specific way. And I can also see this being like a subset of that workflow where once you complete a contractual evaluation, a principal evaluates a teacher or whatever, you know, this particular state reporting aspect of evaluation might be one piece of a whole longer evaluation, and we could build it into the workflow to create the record to upload and as part of that product from the whole thing. And I just wanted to see if that's worth even looking into or if it, you know, if it's going to be defeated right out of the gate.
Tom, remember that we talked about the templates with dates in that we would need to purge and reload those? So they wouldn't be able to just send a subset of them. They'd have to send all of them over again.
Normally the way we would do, I think the way we would do this, Charlene, and obviously we're still in the development stages of some of this too. So we don't have all the answers on how we're going to actually process this data once we get it. But I would anticipate that the reporting date would be part of that purge process. So if a district is sending data for a particular reporting date, we would expect that they would send all of the data for that reporting date, and we would purge, you know, based on that reporting date. So
that makes sense.
It is possible that, you know, if a district decides that once the ELA assessments have been administered, they don't want to send data anymore for that reporting date, they could potentially not send that anymore, just freeze the extracts from their student management system relating to that and not update that information anymore. But that's a district decision. I think we'll be able to support that on how we process this data.
Okay. Could you go to the template for a moment?
Sure. Which one? Staff student course?
No, the evaluation.
The staff evaluation?
Yeah.
Okay.
So is there there's no school link on that, correct? So
the staff district code.
Staff district code. Yeah, because there may be, certain staff people may teach in multiple schools.
That's right.
A number of the other templates that we are extracting, we're extracting, you know, on a school by school basis.
Right.
And I'm trying to get a handle on the reporting requirement, either by school or by district. Are you prepared to accept records by school, or do we have to merge them into one file before uploading for the whole district?
Well, remember that the staff evaluation rating template is exactly what it says. It's the evaluation of an individual teacher by that school district, and that rating record has four pieces to it, but it's comprehensive across the performance of that teacher in all the courses and all the buildings in which that teacher may be assigned in that district. I thought that, and we can't control this at your end, but I thought that these data would actually be in a centralized HR system that would collect the evaluation of the teacher after it was completed and then move that through our system. So to answer your question directly, no, this is not building-based. It's the evaluation of a teacher.
Yeah, I get that. But I think there might be some of our customers that will decide to do something centrally, but I could also envision some, you know, where there aren't crossover teachers, they might, the data for the evaluation might reside in the school, and they might have to come up with a process if there are teachers that are found in multiple schools to decide, well, which of those records in school A or school B is going to contain the evaluation. So my main question was about when we're building the extract, will you accept, a file from school A followed by a file from school B followed by a file from school C, assuming that all of those contain all the valid records that you want, or do we have to put them in one upload?
We need the first, I'm going to actually sound like a state bureaucrat, John. You need to work those situations out with your clients as to how they want to choose to report the final result. The only thing that we're collecting is the final result of an individual teacher's complete evaluation.
So if
there are components of that evaluation floating around in different buildings, it's the responsibility of the district to report to us the data that's indicated on this template. Now, if what you're saying is that teacher X's entire evaluation is over in building B, will we accept the data from building B? Well, of course, but the bottom line is we need the data that's specified in this template, and this template collects the final complete total evaluation for an individual teacher for an individual school year.
Yeah, I understand that, and you've answered the question. I just wanted to get to the technical point about if there were going to be some barrier, if I were to upload school B and it only contains school B's teachers, would that somehow cause
I don't think that would be a barrier at all, provided you ultimately, if that district ultimately reports all the teachers that it's required to report.
Right, so I can upload school A followed by school B in separate uploads, and that'll be fine. Okay, and then finally, what about teachers that are like distance learning teachers?
Again, for this year, we're kind of fortunate in that regard. We're going to define all of that over the course of next year for the following year. In this year, we're required to report only 4 through 8 ELA and mathematics teachers for the purposes of evaluation. And for those teachers, the district must choose who the primary teacher is. And so for the time being, we don't have any guidance on distance learning. If district decided the distance learning teacher was the primary teacher, then that teacher would be reported for this year. But our guidance is fairly simple. Only 4 through 8 ELA and math, only primary teacher.
Very good.
And if it is the distance learning teacher that's reported, it would be reported by the employer of the distance learning teacher.
Right.
I see. Okay, final question.
All those various scenarios we're quite familiar with and hope to have them worked out for the following year when we actually, this legislation extends to every teacher in the state regardless of what they're teaching.
Great. Final question. You may want to hang up on me after I ask this.
Not at all, John. That's why we're here.
To what extent have you considered doing some of this collection in SIF, and is there a timeline for that?
Well, I'll have Tom do the timeline, but let me say this. With regard to staff evaluation rating, we at the state level are only collecting the final rating. The final rating includes the state assessment component of the final rating. The districts will not have the state assessment scores until at least June, probably July 2012. So So Tom Camiga, who's on the line, is responsible for data collection, and he may want to do some intermediate collections at some point in time. I don't know, and I'll let him address that in a moment. But the fact of the matter is that a district will not have a complete record until they have the state assessment data. And under our current schedule, they don't ordinarily get the state assessment data till July. So I don't see where any district in the state could send us this data prior to roughly August 2012 or so. Tom, you have any comments on that?
I don't, because I don't think we've gotten to that level of discussion with the people that are making those decisions.
Right.
I have one that, though, Peter, and it just sort of triggered something when you mentioned that the only thing we're collecting at the state level is the overall rating. I guess I wasn't totally sure that that's what was going to happen, and I think there's some discussion that still needs to go on with that. The other piece to this is that, you know, the state is going to be responsible for calculating the 20% component for the state assessments.
Right.
I don't know how that, we have to have some discussions about how that information is going to make it back to the school districts and what they need to do with it. So I think there still is some discussion that's going to have to take place on what evaluation information is being collected at the state and what is being sent back to the school districts.
Yeah, good point. So, John, I guess the bottom line here is while we have this well-designed and we think that we have it nailed down on evaluation, staff evaluation rating, both my response and Tom's response indicate we have some time to work out some of those details since the evaluations, in any event, can't be completed to the end of the 2011-12 school year.
Can I restate the question?
Sure.
Okay. Not concentrating on evaluations anymore, but on all the collections, you know,
yeah.
In student light and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent are you considering or have a plan to collect this via SIF, the School Interoperability Framework, with SIF agents?
We have a standard interface that is not, quote, SIF compliant. It's a kind of our own version of a set of interoperability standards that we've been used successfully for many years now. We call it Level Zero. It includes in it not only a standard interface that everyone in the state has been using for going on 7 years now, but we've made it very robust by building into it all of the business rules and all of our edits so that it rejects any data that is not in compliance with our business rules. And that application is very, very close to the end user. So we found it very convenient. We do continue to talk to the SIF folks. We meet with them, you know, fairly regularly. We all participate in the national NCS conferences, and the SIF folks are there all the time. But at this point in time, we don't have any plans to do what you would consider classic technical SIF compliance through SIF.
Okay. That's it for me. Thanks.
John, thanks for your participation. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay, there are no other vendors with their hands up, so Rick, you're back online if you have additional questions. Steve Mercado? What, Rick, is that? Okay, Steve Mercado?
Steve here. Can you hear me?
We can, Steve. Where are you from?
Educational Microsystems. I'm working with Nassau BOCES to provide this SEERS data.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. My question is as follows. We're building an entire, which we hope will be comprehensive system to capture and upload these data sets. My question is...
Can I interrupt you for a moment, Steve? Are you doing Nassau BOCES itself or Nassau BOCES school district clients?
Nassau BOCES itself.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
Our question is as follows. We won't be absolutely sure that our system performs according to the required specifications until and unless we can successfully run it against level zero. So
that
my question to you guys, what is the earliest moment when we can reasonably expect to have access to a newly revised level zero that will permit us to start processing these data sets?
I think the time set for the level zero that's adjusted for BOCES needs, because there is a set of BOCES specific templates out there. They're basically the same as these templates, but there's some minor changes in the business rules to accommodate BOCES operating differently in a school district. I believe those are scheduled for November at the level zero people here in the room, and they're shaking their head yes. So that release for BOCES specific level zero interfaces is scheduled for November, Steve.
Sounds good to me. Thanks very much.
And also we thank you because the BOCES, the fact that it's optional for this year, and the fact that NASA BOCES, we want to thank them publicly, is willing to engage in this, will be very, very helpful not only to us but to everyone in the state who has to do this next year. So we'll stay close to you guys, and to the extent that you need our help or just observe what's happening, we'll use that as a lesson for everyone else for next year. So we thank you for kind of being a pioneer here. Thank you.
Sounds good to me. Thank you.
Mike Bastien?
Bastien.
Bastien?
Yep. I'm from Narek. I'm sitting in Jeff Baker's old chair right now anyway.
Jeff just left the room. He must have known you were coming on.
No, he's going back to France today. So.
Go ahead, Mike.
In any case, my question is regards – I have two questions. One has to do with the relationship start date on that staff student course template. Is that standardized at all, or –
No, the relationship start date is the first date that the teacher and student come together in that course and section. So, for example, a teacher starts the school year September 3rd and has 20 kids in the class. So for those 20 kids and that teacher, September 3rd is the start date for that relationship. October 7th, one of those kids leaves the class permanently, gets transferred to another course, or leaves the district. So the end date for the relationship for that kid and that teacher is October 7th.
No, but if there's like, I know this is kind of, you know, a little bit detailed, but if there's like some sort of like a summer assignment or something like that, would there be any issue where the relationship start date is sometime, you know, where the beginning of the school year?
The 11-12 school year, we're not collecting any summer school data.
Okay, but summer assignment data, you know. I'll clarify with some of the districts here.
Okay, we'll clarify it to Santa. If you want to make that question more specific, and email it to Charlene Swanson, cswanson@mail.nysa.gov.
Sure.
We'll investigate what it is you're suggesting. Are you suggesting that a teacher and group of students might start a course like in the middle of August and then keep going in September?
Exactly.
Okay, email that to us and we'll review it. We didn't anticipate something like that happening. We do have a guidance from our bosses that indicate we're not collecting summer school data with regard to this process for this year. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, email it to us and we'll make a determination, okay?
And then my other quick question has to do with the student grades template. And you said that we're only accepting values for final grades where those grades exist and that we're not collecting null values.
Correct.
This year, there are certain SMSs that are exporting null values, and Level 2 is accepting those values. So is it to be assumed that next year those values will not be accepted by Level 2?
That's correct. We'll put a Level 0 edit there that will exclude them.
Okay.
And the reason – I don't want to get into the whole thing, but the reason – never mind. We're going to exclude them. We were using stud grades last year to not only collect the final grades but also to generate rosters. Now that we don't need stud grades to generate rosters, we're falling back to collecting just what it was originally intended to do, and that is the grades associated with the course.
So, but I can assume that a null grade will be rejected on a verification report
yes.
In the next series.
Level 0 will reject it. We won't let you load it.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Centris Group, Mary Shaw is back on.
Mary, Centris?
Yes. Can you hear me or did I – hello?
No, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Couldn't remember if I forgot to hit that #6 thing. I just wanted to let you know we are working with probably about 12 to 15 BOCES who have been using our software for grading for the last several years. And
yes, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, so I guess I'm kind of following up on what you said to Steve out there at NASA. You're not discouraging the BOCES from reporting, right?
No, all the regents would like to encourage them to do it, but frankly, there's such a pushback from the field that we found out BOCES that actually don't have student management systems.
Right.
They just weren't ready, so we were concerned about the quality of the data that we may get from them. If a BOCES thinks they're ready to go, we will do everything we can to help them at this end. We work with the L1s every month in face-to-face meetings, and we'll try to organize them to assist as well. So, Mary, if you want to reach out to your clients and see if any of them would like to submit data for the 11-12 school year, we would encourage it. However, we would ask them to contact the L1 immediately because they're going to need help from the L1 to be successful.
I guess that's one of my questions because I don't even know if they know who those people are.
We can help them. We can, again, if you have any questions, email Charlene.
Okay.
And she will tell you which level one provider is responsible for which BOCES. Ordinarily, they would know because it's just the RIC that has them as a component BOCES.
Okay.
But if there's any question about it, certainly contact us, Mary, and we'll let you know, okay?
Definitely we'll do that because, quite honestly, I have not talked to one of them yet who doesn't want to try it this year.
Okay.
Not that they're excited about it, but they want to use this.
Of course they're excited about it. How much fun can you have in 1 year?
Right. They kind of just want to practice this year.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, that's nice. The fact that it's optional allows them to practice.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Winnie, Rick.
Peter, it's Maggie. I just have one quick question, and I think the answer. On the local staff ID on the evaluation template.
Staff evaluation? Yeah.
We're assuming that that's coming from potentially a human resource system. So
again, we address this many times, Mag. I think our policy is State Education Department, and I hate when I sound like a state bureaucrat, but this is a case where I have to. We define the data the districts are required to send us, and this template does that, right? The district has to find a way to send it to us. My conversations with the HR people indicate to me that they believe they own these data, that in many cases these data are in HR systems now, if not in HR file drawers now. So, yeah, my thought is that these will, for the most part, come from HR systems, but that's not our job to tell people that. That's the district's job to decide how they're going to get us these data.
My question is, does that local staff ID have to match the local staff ID from the student system?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Local ID has to be unique across the district.
I think it might be helpful, and I don't know if you're the one to do this, but some guidance to that fact might be helpful for districts.
That's a good point. I agree. I've discussed this with the HR people because they don't have the staff snapshot data in their systems. And snapshot data is the system where we match the staff ID to the teach ID. So you're right, Maggie. We should think this through and provide better guidance. I'll ask Marlene to follow up on this at the tech standards meeting so we can get some guidance for it, okay? Thanks. Good point, Maggie. Thank you.
Lower Hudson.
Lower Hudson, you guys there?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. It's Denise.
Hi, Denise.
Hi. Any further discussion on where the staff evaluation data is going to be loaded into, whether it's going to go into level zero?
Discussion at this point, and again, Marlene will follow up this at Tech Standards. At this point, the discussion is to not have a level zero module that does that, but to move the data direct from the systems to the L1s. How that's going to work, we have yet to work out. As I pointed out a few times here today, the good news is that none of these data are going to be available to way towards the end of the 11-12 school year, no matter what, and so we have a little time to work on it. But our thought is that we will not do a level zero module.
Okay, and just back to the staff ID in the staff evaluation template.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the staff ID in the HR systems is not the same as the staff ID in the student systems.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying those have to be unique across
yes.
the district? Have
yeah,
to be the
and the analogy, you've heard me say this before, Denise, the analogy I use is back in 2000, I'm going to guess 6 or so, when we first started getting special ed data. Remember we used to do this without special ed data? And then we started getting special ed data, and what did we discover? The ID of the kid in the special ed system was different than the ID of that same kid in the general ed system in the same district.
Yeah, true.
And as you know, we struggled with that. Mary from Centrist is online. She remembers this. We struggled with that until now. It's commonplace. Those IDs are all the same. They move to us seamlessly, and there's no problem. And we have the same challenge with staff. It has to be unique across the district.
So one of the systems will have to change.
Absolutely. Okay. Just the way the special ed systems and the general ed systems accommodated this 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Sure.
Every time we reach out to a new system, we're going to find new anomalies. We're going to find, and you know, this is going to be a bit of a struggle. That's why I'm glad we have so much time. You're going to find the name of the person in the special ed system spelled differently than the one in the general ed, HR system, spelled differently than the one in the student management system. So there's all kinds of issues like that. We're going to have to work them out. Again, at the state level, we define the data we need to collect. Now we need to work together on finding the smoothest way to collect it. And I think we have some time to do that. And fortunately, you know, we're together regularly at Tech Standards and Project Managers, and we will find the best way to do that. And for you vendors out there that have concerns about this, we will promise to keep you in the loop the way we're doing here today. And you bring issues to our attention, we'll do our best to respond to them.
One more quick question. Are the vendors required to supply the marking period code template this year? I know we didn't use it last year. The marking period code and the location marking periods, the vendors are supposed to supply that, right?
Marking period. Tom, you want to respond to that? I have my thoughts on that, but I better give it over to Tom. Tom?
I believe the location marking period template is something that will be provided by the vendors because it does have starting and ending dates for marking periods that only the student management systems will know. So I think that will be information that is supported by level zero or the level zero express system. Arlene, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
I believe that's right, Tom.
Okay.
Thanks, Denise.
Thank you.
Okay, do you have anything else? I think that's all the questions we have. Let me do some housekeeping here. In addition to the BOCES being optional for 2011-12, I've mentioned several times we're only collecting Regents grades, we're only collecting courses associated with the state course codes, et cetera. There is an incentive out there for actually school districts to send us all courses in all situations. We don't have full guidance for that. We don't have a full course catalog for that yet. But if you have anybody out there that's going to do that, we heard Syracuse City may do it, we will have a full course catalog by January, and we will have guidance for the courses that don't fit the discussion that I had here this morning by January. We were not prepared for that. The Regents indicated that they're encouraging districts to do full participation. If districts choose to do that, we'll work out those details. And our schedule for the publication of a full course catalog that goes beyond the limited number of courses we already have published is January 2012. I remind you of two things. You can email Charlene Swanson if you have any additional comments or questions on today's webinar.
Yeah, just missed the beginning.
If you're a vendor and you want a one-to-one discussion on these templates and values and issues, again, email Charlene, and we will set up a one-to-one discussion for vendors. Finally, these templates in their annotated formats, and Joe, thanks for pointing out that we accidentally put up the previous version of that one template. We will get the correct annotated versions on our website as soon as possible. The accompanying tables will be on the website by the end of August, and today's webinar was recorded, and the link for that recording will be up on the website by next week. What's that?
Joe,
you have your hand up again?
Clarification, we missed the beginning of Denise's question about what's going to go through level zero and what's going to go by template. So what's going to go, we just didn't hear which
now,
category.
Joe, we do not have any plans to do the staff evaluation rating using level zero.
Okay, that's what we thought, but we missed the beginning of we couldn't hear the beginning of the question. But thank you for clarifying.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Okay, thanks everyone for participating. Please be in touch with us if you need anything else, and we look forward to working with all of you for the balance of the year. Thank you. Have a good day, everybody. Bye.
Bye.